One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Rich Hudson.
Hello.
And Josh Brown.
Hello.
And guys, there are so many games!
There's too many games!
Oh. There's a ridiculous amount of stuff. Even though we had Resident Evil 2 and I forget what the other release of January was.
Kingdom Hearts 3.
There were some things to be talked about, you know, leading up to now. And then last Friday, the industry just went, here's everything else that we could have spread across the January, and we didn't. So we sort of scrabbled, we divided, we conquered, we've all played pretty much everything that's out there, minus the new Far Cry, because who even wants to play the new Far Cry? Other than the entirety of the British population, because it's number one in the charts. But
wow,
we'll what? Get,
yeah, it's literally number one in the charts.
Even with its sales figures so far.
Yeah, it's like it beat Metro. So that means only
Britain are playing the game entirely.
I mean, it might be everyone else
has given up on it.
Yeah, maybe. It might be the entire Western Hemisphere. But it turns out people still like some Far Cry, even if it's just, here's your more,
Fair enough. Some
more. Fair enough, I guess. But yes, so we've written down a list of the different things that we're going through. And I want to open with Crackdown 3.
Ooh.
Because that thing's reception has been very, very middling.
So
I went into it on Friday night, and I've almost finished the story. There's not really a story. there's Terry Crews saying some things, saying skills for kills, and then people go, skills for kills, which is a phrase from the first game. And you just get given a whole bunch of open world objectives, go clear out some strongholds, go kill some gangsters, throw some cars at some gangsters, throw the gangsters at the other gangsters, and you just do that for about 6 to 7
hours. I remember that 12 years ago.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So the thing that I want to say is that it's nowhere near as bad as you might think. The reviews are very spot on across the board. Lots of fives, lots of sixes. It's very 5-6 out of 10. But you can have a lot of fun with it if you play the original. I don't know if you guys played the earlier ones?
Nope. I'm a huge fan of number one, and I still played the hell out of two.
Okay, so I dropped off two because I thought it was just too much of the same. It was like, here's a wingsuit, and I was like, it's not enough. But that first one, that was my first ever 360 game.
Mm-hmm.
So like, when you play the third one, like, make no mistake, it's almost as if they remade the original. It's nigh on the same. They've tightened up the jumping, and you've got like way better melee attacks and stuff, because you had a terrible kick in the first one.
Yeah.
That weird little spin kick thing. And so the overall script and the tone is like bad. The script writing is bad. None of the jokes land. It's cringe as hell. But if you turn all that off, love your little podcast game, you just want to run around shooting stuff, everyone explodes in icons, and you just clear the map out bit by bit. The weapons feel meaty, the jumping feels good, throwing stuff at other stuff feels good.
But for a full £50...
Don't pay the full price.
Okay.
Don't do that. Do the Game Pass.
Okay.
It's definitely a good Game Pass game. You know how, kind of like how Sea of Thieves was like, I'll drop in for like £7.
Give it a bash on the free trial.
I'll try the free trial. It's a very good free trial game, I would say.
That's interesting, because I was watching some coverage at the weekend, and even though a lot of people were saying about how bad it was, how clunky it was, I was looking at it, and just the fact that it was sort of like the Crackdown cars and the Crackdown suits, I was thinking, I could definitely play this.
It's
game,
honestly,
you know,
like, it doesn't hold up if you don't have the reverence for the originals. If you just went into it now, it would play like hell. But I think because you know what you're supposed to be doing in Crackdown, you're supposed to be constantly on the move, very acrobatic, like kind of, you know, over the top aerial combat stuff. You're constantly picking something up and throwing it and leaping around everywhere. And it reminded me a lot of like when that was kind of Xbox's identity. You had like Crackdown and Halo were both these two like jumping around acrobatic kind of shooters or action games. And it just took me back to that time. And you've got the same voice actor playing the commander from the first game and stuff. And there's enough there where you can go, yep, it's some Crackdown. I mean, that's literally all it is.
Yeah.
It's some Crackdown.
And that's probably why it's been a very sort of small game. Like, it was very stealth released, as it were, because I was watching Jim Sterling do stuff over the weekend on it, and he was like, yeah, it's another Crackdown game, you know, it's this is fine for 2007, but for 2019, it's like, okay.
Yeah, and playing it again, I mean, obviously one of the biggest hooks with Crackdown was always the agility orbs, and it was like, the reason that it took off so much back then was that we'd never really had a super heroic open world game, and then Infamous did
with that kind of movement.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, now that became the norm, even through things like Call of Duty, like that just became a thing, like rocket jumping and stuff like that, and now that doesn't seem as... like groundbreaking now, which is probably why it's been coined as a great 2007 game, just not so much now.
And it's like all they've added is that you can do a double jump, and at the very end, do you know what the final tier unlock is for the athletic thing?
Spoil it for me.
A triple jump.
Whoa!
That's all they can think of. And it's just like you get some boost jumps, you can boost forward, and then you can jump again. And it's like things like that, you go, oh god, could you not have thought of like anything with this?
Yeah.
And you get a rocket punch, you get a ground pound, you get the Arkham Knight eject from the, I was gonna say Batmobile, but eject from your little Crackdown car thing.
Yeah.
Little, like, you know, animations that's kind of come across some different games. But yeah, like, you know, that was the reason it was such a big deal back in the day, was that it felt like, oh my god, I'm jumping around this whole city. And it has enough of that, but I think you have to bring your own kind of fandom to the table kind of thing.
Do you think it's better or worse that it's released now rather than when it was supposed to years ago? Because obviously this game has been delayed over and over again. Now
6
thinking,
years, I think.
Is that long? That's ridiculous.
Well, 2013, it was announced alongside the Xbox One, so.
Christ, it really was, yeah. So is that better or worse? Because, I mean, at this point, expectations were kind of low, but then there's also the feeling that after so many delays and after Microsoft have tried so hard to get it right, that it should be better. If this came out years ago and it didn't have all these delays and didn't have all these setbacks and it was just more Crackdown, maybe that might have been fine. I don't know.
I think the way to get around that is, I think that if they changed the marketing altogether, if Terry Crews was on board from the beginning, because he only came on in like 2015 or 16, and you can tell he's in the opening and the ending cutscene, and he's like, you play as him and he has some dialogue, but it's not a story heavy, Terry Crews heavy thing. It feels like he was bolted on to be like, hey, let's get some engagement.
Yeah, a big name behind this. We can market it better. Yeah.
And so I think if they had a marketing campaign that was very like Sony, like for the players, for the old school, and just said, hey, remember when you played Crackdown? And kind of went like, we've got some more of that. We polished it up. We've got better jumping mechanics, or like, you know, refined animations and stuff. They could absolutely have leaned into, it's more of the same, but the best it's ever been. And I think that would have been a way to address the way Crackdown 2 was more of the same. But no, I mean, it doesn't do enough that's new. And even back in 2013, the open world genre had evolved far past this.
Well, what was really interesting to me was, again, I haven't played it, but from the footage I've seen and like the trailers I've watched, it seems to be scratching the same itch that Sunset Overdrive did years ago. Like the humor in Sunset Overdrive seems similar, and that kind of that did it better. I don't really know why we need this years and years later, when Sunset Overdrive already came out. And
true, there's a weird. Crackdown 3's sense of humor is very mainstream. It's very what Destiny does, and the same thing with Anthem, which we'll get to. But you have all those sort of light little quips, and like the commander, who was always like the guy that everyone used to quote back in Crackdown 1. He's just full-on banter in this one, where he's just sort of like, get a rocket launcher and upgrade your boom. And it's just like, oh god, okay. Like, because they want it to be all self-aware and self-aware stupid, and it kind of goes there. But then some of the way the dialogue's written, and some of the way that they just kind of said bolt Terry Crews on, and that skill for kills thing, or kills for skills, whatever it is, that just feels very like we're trading on this, you know, like whatever it is, 13-year-old nostalgia, which I think is a cool thing to do, but that should have been the whole project. It should have been this callback to like how much Xbox is now a legacy brand, and they could have played into it and all that kind of thing.
I think, though, it's going to be a major sort of stepping stone, or at least kind of indicate what Game Pass is doing, because we saw the sales figures for it, and it was number 13 in the chart. It sold like 83% less than Crackdown 2, which to me indicates that people are playing it. Not necessarily that people aren't playing it or buying it, but they're playing it on Game Pass.
That was physical sales, right?
That was physical sales, so it doesn't take into account Game Pass, doesn't take into account digital sales, so that to me indicates that people like you are picking up a trial or picking up a monthly pass.
Weirdos like me.
I'm going to do it now. I forgot all about it, but that's how I'm going to play Crackdown. And I wonder what precedent that sets, not only for the series, but Microsoft as a whole, and how they handle exclusives.
I'm not going to lie. I played through it on the Friday night, the Saturday, and then this morning when I was writing up the notes on what we're going to talk about, I completely forgot that I played it. It left such a little mark on me. But it was lovely for the time that I did play it, and I did like scratch in the itch. And I love Crackdown. I used to love that original. So I think there's a lot of that. But it doesn't leave any lasting impression whatsoever. It's very much open world formula, the game. But it is an open world formula that they had a huge hand in before Ubisoft made it their own after Assassin's Creed. So I would recommend Crackdown 3, but only if you can get it for either nothing, like hence, I don't know how you're going to get it for nothing, or just on the Game Pass. Do not spend more than £10 for this thing in any sense of the word. So let's go across onto Anthem, which is the other massive deal. Guts of Rich has been playing this.
I've been playing this of all people.
When you finally got onto it, because the servers have been...
Do you know what? I didn't have a problem with the servers.
Okay.
Because I've been playing it on Origin. And There's a part of me that kind of the first thing that I got to with this game is it raises the debate, which is a debate for another time, which is the whole like, should developers be caring about PC ports? Which, yes, they should. Okay. It's a huge part of the market. Mm-hmm. Like, they shouldn't ignore it. Don't listen to what people say. Oh, PC is not important. It is important. You need to make sure that your port is good, because otherwise, if a port is bad, then the people who are playing it on PC will come and say, well, it's a bad game.
Yeah.
But I didn't have many problems with it. I was trying to play some team play stuff with Osley, one of our editors, and mm-hmm. the game for him just was not working at all. Like, genuinely, his mouse was seizing up. He couldn't aim. He couldn't play it at all. I was having some graphical glitches and all this sort of thing. I like how I've just opened into this really negative thing about it. But anyway, yes. I have played Destiny, and I don't see its appeal. I don't find it that interesting. For someone who loves shooting games, and I like a lot of shooting games, like, I thought the idea of a loot grind shooter would be like perfect for me. But for some reason, it didn't land. Anthem, as much as it is more of the same, and you'll hear this from anyone who's been playing it, mm-hmm. it's basically just Destiny by EA and BioWare, which is all we expected, and that's basically what it is. However, I think the mechanically, the setting, the lore, all of that stuff, the game looks stunning. Mm. I think that is miles better than Destiny, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I will just say, it's my opinion doesn't really count for much in terms of loot grind shooters, because, like I said, they're not really my thing, but because I got the chance to play it, I'll happily pick it up and give it a go. Mm-hmm. And I put a good couple of hours into it. And I think if you know loot grind shooters and you like Destiny and stuff like that, then you're going to have an amazing time with this. I think the gunplay is incredible.
Okay.
The world is amazing. The lore does seem interesting, but yeah, you've got the standard, like, the missions are kind of repetitive. Yep. It's all a bit thin. But it's, I had a good time with it. It's not something I'd necessarily buy now that I've tried it. I'm happy I've tried it. And I am, honestly, I am pleasantly surprised, because, as I think we all did, we all went into the Anthem time of this year thinking, we're not really sure how this is going to turn out.
Well, a lot of its impressions have been, it hasn't been savaged, but there's a lot of stuff.
It's fine.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Mm-hmm. I kind of came out of the beta that way, because I spent a lot of time on the open beta.
Yeah.
Sorry, the private beta, whatever it was, the beta, and put a lot of hours into that. And it was like, I ended up writing it up on the site, because we do ups and downs. It's like five ups, five downs, totally fine. It's a fine game.
Mm-hmm.
but, excuse me, I'm still ill. What did you think of the story? Did they do a good job of setting up, like, why you're going to keep playing this, or is it
I think there was, unlike going into Destiny, where I felt like when you come into it and I thought, oh god, I've missed like 5,000 other games worth of this series.
Right.
Coming into Anthem, it was still, I think obviously you get an idea, a rough idea of what's going on, and it felt, going into Anthem, it felt like I knew more about the world than it was going into Destiny.
Okay.
Because I think there is a lot of exploration to do, there's a lot of digging up of more of the lore, but I feel like they gave you a good sizable like chunk to get your teeth into going into Anthem versus going into Destiny.
Because I watched, I don't know if you guys saw Neil Blomkamp's short film that he put out.
Now that I've played it, I'm going to go and watch
Okay, so that made me way more interested in the lore and the world, and I cared about Anthem more through that film than I did through anything that EA or BioWare have put out. But the base setup seems to kind of mirror Destiny in that you're looking after Fort Tarsus, you have your Javelin mech, you're going out, you're fighting back against, the Scars, or whatever you call the evil dudes?
There's
a bunch of different factions.
The Scars are like the first ones you come up against.
Right, so there's a whole bunch of like evil factions. You go out, you do missions, you come back, you're basically looking after Fort Tarsus the same way that you were in Destiny, you were looking after the Guardian, or the Traveler, sorry. And so that seems like a way for them to do, because I mean, I don't know what the mission variety was like for you. Like, it's go to a place, defend place, shoot things.
It wasn't too bad, actually. I think that I only did a couple of missions. Like, I'm not sure exactly when they're going to start getting repetitive.
Right now,
that's the thing, is like, I'm pretty certain I knew, like, okay, I've done like two or three different variants, it's just going to be this from here on out. You know, the standard fetch quest for cosmetics. Let's put in a fetch quest for cosmetics. What's that? Do you need to make a statement with your Javelin player? Do you want to be boring? That was so on the nose.
Yeah.
And I was sat there like, really?
Yeah. EA? So I'll outline what that is. When you first got to customize your Javelin, the overvoice guy says, "Time to make a statement." And it's Twitch.
I don't know what it was in the beta, but like, you go and speak to this guy, and he's like, "I run the store here. We need a couple of things to get this going. So fetch quest, and then it was like, "Now we're gonna do you want to make a statement with your Javelin? This is where you come and do it." And it's like, now I must admit, like, on the customization side, there is a lot of customization for your Javelin. It's ridiculous, like picking different materials for like 6 or 7 different things to make it all look very different. There's lots and lots of cosmetics and stuff like that.
And you get a cloth Javelin.
I want a cloth Javelin. Do you know what, actually, I had, because I jumped into the game with like a couple of thousand coins, so I did have some currency to play with in the store. And there's only like 5 things to buy, so I had this like this brown and black like felt, but it looked like the carpet from The Shining.
Oh, right.
I had playing that. As the 60s.
Yeah. I had that on my javelin. I was like, this is really dumb, but it looks kind of cool. Gameplay-wise, it's fantastic, but that shoehorned in, hey, you should be making a statement, i.e. give us all your money, like that was really on the nose. Right, and I thought, oh, that's
Did you feel any other elements of that tone coming through elsewhere? Or
no, not really.
Okay, good.
Because at the end of the day, like, in that kind of game, emotes, because they're a thing, but they're not really that useful. Mm. The only time I used emotes in my time with Anthem over the weekend was when I jumped into one of the first missions after you've done the first free roam, and this woman turns up and she's like, oh, you're working for me now. And you're like, why? And she's like, just do it. and she gives you a mission. And it
no
was
time
like,
to explain.
Yeah,
oh,
it was.
God, yeah.
Because I did the first mission with Osley, just the two of us, and then I thought, oh, he's gone now because he can't play the game because it's broken for him. I'll play with some randoms. And we jumped in and we flew over to, you know, the flying is fantastic. It's really, really cool. And, you know, landed at the place where I'm meant to go. Nothing.
Right.
And we're just like, there's four of us like running about. Like we go, oh, there's a, you know, at the beginning, I don't know whether it's the same again in the beta, there's a point when you go underwater and you swim through some stuff. It's like, oh, there's one of these like right here, right where we are. Do we go through here? Nope, return to the mission area. Go back. And we go though, nothing's happening. So all the time I was using emotes, we were just emoting at each other and just like waving and just waving and then just going, bollocks to it, we'll just quit and start again. But the game, that didn't work really, but...
It kind of sounds a little bit like the launch of The Division, where there was something there. Mechanically, there was something there. In the world, there was something there, but it didn't quite coalesce together.
Yeah.
Whether it was bugs, or whether it was because of a lack of content, or lack of story. But I don't know, Rich, do you think, one, are you going to continue playing Anthem? And two, do you think it is a foundation worth building on in sequels to come?
I think it's a foundation worth building on in the game itself.
Right.
Like, if you're going to say, okay, Anthem was a go, we're going to do Anthem 2 or Anthem subtitle, whatever you're going to call it, then kind of put that one to the wayside. I think that's kind of a weird way to do it. I think a game like that should be one that just gets progressively more added to
like
it.
Like they put DLC or
kind of like a Team Fortress, kind of like a Rainbow Six Siege. They just keep adding to it rather than just releasing a new iteration of the game.
Well, their whole thing is that the Anthem itself is the world that keeps changing and they're trying to get a hold on like matter itself.
And I think canonically they've given themselves that platform to be able to tweak and manipulate it and mold it as they like. So
now
I think
it's a battle royale.
I'll
tell you what though. Obviously, there's no PvP as far as I know, but the actual like mechanics of the shooting and the combat and stuff. I think that'd be really fun in a multiplayer mode. It would actually be quite cool. But I think Anthem itself has got a good base. Again, as we've said, it's fine. It's just a Destiny clone. But I think, like I said, I think setting wise, gameplay wise, third person in that kind of scenario feels a lot better than first person.
Right.
Even though I'm a big FPS fan, like just being able to see yourself in that world makes you feel more involved, I think, versus doing it in a first person perspective like you did with Destiny. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a good platform. I'm hoping that BioWare do something with it, because obviously a lot of people are looking at BioWare in a very weird light right now after the wake of Mass Effect Andromeda. Yeah, exactly. But I think they're like the RPG elements are very minimal from what I've seen.
Okay.
But I think the lore wise, I know that's obviously a big thing with like BioWare stuff. The lore looks to be really interesting. It's worth digging into. So I think there is a definite platform there. Maybe this will be the successor to Destiny as to when Destiny may or may not just sort of stop after like Bungie's leaving, because Destiny's gone with Bungie.
Well,
whether they just go, okay, fine, that's done, that we'll do something else now. Maybe Anthem will become the new Destiny and just be its own thing and just keep
it. It is kind of funny like how many different companies are trying to get in on the Destiny hype. Like you had sort of Ubisoft going, maybe the Division will sort of like take the audience over, and they did for that initial couple of months, and they had like a 94% drop off or whatever it was. And the Division 2 is coming next month. But yeah, like Bungie have said that they're going to tie off like Destiny, or they're going to keep going with Destiny for now, and assumedly that'll do, I don't know whether that's Destiny 3 or like some big story pack
just
or whatever.
Another pack of DLCs I think will make the most sense,
maybe
doing a whole new game.
And then it's like, do they move away from loot shooter stuff and something like Anthem kind of takes forward. I don't know. I wonder. Like, I guess it depends on how the different missions go. Like you said, they can plug stuff into it, and you know they've called it like a definitive title. It's just Anthem. It's not Anthem the Chronicles or
but
whatever.
As to whether I keep playing it, I don't know. I think I need to give it. I'm going to give it another go while I can, and put some more time into it just to progress through and see what it's like. Because I feel like I can't make a decision now as to like whether I do or don't like this game, because I'm still getting my head around it. Because like I said, loot grind shooters are a relatively new thing for me, and this one has taken me in more so than Destiny. So I am intrigued to give it.
plus you'll benefit by not necessarily having the Mass Effect love, because
all the massive Destiny stuff. So I'm going into this relatively new. Mm. So yeah. I'm seeing this without like a Destiny taint, mm-hmm. as it were. So. Mm-hmm.
Oh, sorry, I'm going
to
leap in.
I have nothing to say about Anthem. It's one of those games that it's not even supposed to be spiteful. I
no, that says
to
the most
point,
that you could.
It's the thing, like, when it was first announced, it was BioWare's new game, and I wasn't sort of down in it. I was quite happy to see what they were going to deliver, but I just haven't kept up with it. I haven't even read the reactions, really. Osley had a big rant on it before we came in here, actually.
Yeah. I read it turning over to the writing side, so he can give us paragraphs of stuff that he's hating about it.
I mean,
it's strange. Like, when I played the beta, I was like, this is exactly what I thought it was going to be. And then I was really curious, because it's BioWare, and I love Mass Effect, I quite like Dragon Age and all that kind of thing. And I'm like, okay, I hope that they deliver on the story side. And there were bits and pieces of that in the beta, like characters like Matthias, who, like, splits himself three ways, and then you have one of his three personalities just is Morden Solas from Mass Effect 2.
Yeah.
And I was like, in 3. And I was like, I'm totally game if you're going to write great characters. I don't mind the grindy nature if the characters I'm checking in with have, like, good personalities.
Yeah, see, if the lore's really good to back it up. As much as it could be repetitive, like, mm-hmm. there's nothing necessarily wrong with stuff necessarily being repetitive. Crackdown 3, for example, apparently, it's repetitive over and over again. Another one that I always talk about, Just Cause 2, is repetitive over and over again, but it's really, really good.
Yeah.
Like, maybe that's something they could capture with Anthem.
What I want to ask you guys is, when it comes to something like Anthem, the reason I haven't touched it, well, obviously because I don't have a PC running enough to early release codes, but the reason I'm not going to pick it up at launch is because I only have so much time in my gaming life and life in general. These loot grind shooters demand so much time, they demand so much investment mm-hmm. on the behalf of the player, and that's fine, but I can only do one at a time, and I need to pick very carefully. So it's either going to be Anthem, it's going to be The Division 2, or whatever else is coming out this fall.
Just do one a month?
I can't do one a month because I feel like I don't get everything out of it. But people play Destiny, they play it for years, and they get
Destiny
so
fans
much
are
out
insane.
Of it. That's exactly it.
And I used to be one.
Well, exactly, yeah. That's like, you need to bring that level of investment to these games to properly, not get your money's worth, but sort of live in this world. And I don't just want to dip in and be a tourist for a little bit. As fun as that might be, when The Division comes out, we'll make a decision on which game I want to properly invest my time in. But I don't know if you guys feel the same way when it comes to these games, because I don't for RPGs. When it's RPGs, I'll play whatever.
I think with Anthem, it feels more drop-in, drop-out.
Right.
It's kind of the beauty of it being a multiplayer. Because unlike Destiny, when I played Destiny, like, you had the hub where there were other people running about. You don't have that.
You've got 4 tosses.
Yeah, but you don't always have loads of random people.
Oh, people.
I think it's only in your squad who appear in the fort with you. So
there's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes.
Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
I think that implication means that you're only jumping into multiplayer when you're going into particular missions, and that means you'll always be on the same page as the people you're playing
Speaking
with. So it feels more drop-in, drop-out.
They have that really weird way that the menu systems work.
Oh, the menus are garbage.
Yeah, and you go into a map, you pick your mission, but you don't boot from that same screen. You button back out down to your javelin, and then you go
that
from there.
Really threw me.
Why?
Like, and then because when I first went to my mission, I was like, oh, press escape to go back. Okay, and I pressed escape, and I got out of my javelin. I was like, no, got back into my javelin, and then having to do the menus are.
It's so weird.
It's like the first time you play something like Call of Duty Black Ops 4 and all the menus are different, right. And you've got no idea what's going on. It's kind of like that.
Because there was that, and then I read, like, obviously the bugs and glitches abound, but like some people have been going from that mission select screen, some newcomers, brand new players have been getting put straight into the final fight.
That's not good.
Not that you can't pick it from a menu, but the game's just not allocating missions
properly. In my free roam stuff, I downed because I ended up like, because the only thing about the free roam stuff, you've got no idea what is where. Like, oh, right. Over here is like really high level stuff. Like I once was just flying about and I came through a clearing and there was this massive, like, huge lad, and I thought, cool. Bye, and I ran away, and okay. I got taken out by, I must have flown over another nest of various nasties and they just shot me down, and then I started spawning back on the platform outside the fort and just downing. I'm like, this shouldn't be happening.
Just as a very quick thing, because that is a personal thing, how quickly do you run out of fuel when you're flying?
Like, wasn't too bad, actually. I like the fact that you can cool down with waterfalls and there's an abundance of that, which I find not only makes it mechanically more fun, it also makes it absolutely beautiful.
True.
As you're flying about. But also the idea that if you're dipping down directly, and obviously there's a lot of verticality in the world, then you get to cool down your thrusters. Not as much, but like that. But
it'll
also
if
you just land, it takes a couple of seconds to cool them down, just jump up and fly again. So if the flying was no, because I remember you talking about the flying from the beta, it was nowhere near as bad as I thought it was after hearing what you said about it. So
because the actual flight is great, the mechanics, the physics of it, the momentum, and like the flight in the combat is the best thing they have.
Flying through caves is the most fun.
Yeah.
It's cool. Like, you feel like such a badass when you do it.
That was why it annoyed me that the meter went down so fast. Obviously, you're going to.
It might have been tweaked by now. Yeah, I'm sure you'll get buffs and things like that.
But let's move on to the best thing of 2019, Tetris 99 Battle Royale.
My God.
You little.
Josh won't play it.
I'm going to play it.
You're not going to play it. You said you were going to play it last week.
Right, when you come to me and you say, Josh, I've got a game for you, it's a Tetris, but it's Battle Royale. What am I supposed to respond to that with, Scott?
You take the Switch off one of us.
Oh, my God.
And you play it.
Josh, you're playing it at lunchtime today.
Yes, you're playing it in 10 minutes. It's really good. It's extremely good. We're not going to spend too much time on it because obviously Tetris and people run for the hills.
We've just spoken loads about Anthem.
Yes, but it is. It's surprising. It's the game. You wouldn't think it would work. You wouldn't think.
It's one of those things where I could just picture at the Tetris company based. I think they're based in Canada. Just like somebody walking into the meeting room with Alexei Pajitnov is sat there and whatever the other guy's name's called. Just like, hey, we should do Tetris Battle Royale.
Just
and they just go, they're just laughing at them. The egg on their faces. God.
You wouldn't think it would work, but it really does. I think the reason that it works so well is that it's really minimalist on the menu side. It gets you booted into games and you can see like all of your 98 other players just playing alongside you.
There's no fannying about. One of the things is we had this debate about Battle Royale in a podcast the other week, and we were always saying, oh, there's always the grind of landing and looting and dying and loading. You don't have that in this. You're just in there straight away. But the thing is, like, I'll always say this, that Tetris is the perfect game, but somehow they've made it even better in
Josh
Battle Royale states.
Why are you laughing at such a statement?
I'm not. It's just right. This is from the man who also says Roller Coaster Tycoon is the best game of all time.
It's because it is,
and
Josh.
Planet Coaster, to be honest.
And Planet Coaster.
Yeah, wherever he's played at the time, but it's good.
PUBG was good. Goodness me.
PUBG was the best thing ever back in 2016. Tetris, though, has some legs. I think I like that they do a thing where you flick the right stick to decide who you want to attack. And so if someone's like near death, if they're about to be filled up, stop laughing
at
the
Tetris. I'm sorry.
It's a really good thing. And you can finish people off, you get badges, that means that you can attack other different players,
and you can
also
attack with more
people.
Things. Basically, they've just taken it, because again, the idea of Tetris Battle Royale sounds really stupid, but the amount of depth, but they've managed to put into this, there's only like two or three other things to get your head around if you're new to Tetris or you've been playing Tetris for years. There's a couple of things to do, kind of in the same way Effect just went, hey, here's one extra thing, and it just improved the whole thing. In the same way this, like, here's the badge system, here's Battle Royale, go, and then just left people to it. And it is the most addictive Battle Royale game there is. Ignore the kids all playing Fortnite constantly.
Balls to your Apex Legends.
Tetris 1993 is out, like, genuinely on Discord this weekend. Just everyone's been talking about Tetris. Like, I've just played second. Look, I've just played first. It's kind of like the same boom with Battle Royale as it did when it first came out, but it's so much more accessible. People who do not play Battle Royale are playing Tetris 1993
because it's
so
accessible.
Much more accessible. And it's incredible. If you've got Switch Online, you have to get it because it's free.
That's the thing.
And just play it. It's
amazing. It is free. You have to have a Nintendo Switch Online subscription or whatever, but it is free. I just, like you said, you can just leap into it. I love the idea of combative Tetris, like done on such a massive
Tetris
scale.
Tetris in a competitive sense is so much fun.
Yeah.
Like in itself, it's been in so many different Tetris games. If you've got any Tetris games, just dig into it and see if you can play 1v1 with a player or a bot. Mm-hmm. It's great fun. And doing that on that kind of scale for free, with so easy to get your head around and so easy to just keep playing, it's astonishing.
I love the final thing, Josh.
Go on then.
Is that you'll love it because someone is going to attack you. It'll say, watch out. And then, like, you know, you'll have a whole bunch of lines will come in, it'll fill up your screen. And you go, hey, what the hell? You flick the stick, you target them, you attack the attacker that was attacking you.
Yeah.
And then you build up a huge thing. And then you drop in one of the long boys on the left hand side and you send them a bunch of lines back in return.
It's great. It says, basically, the thrill you get from Battle Royale, you know, when you get to that last 10 and you're crawling through the zone and your heart is pumping out of your chest, you get that with this game, which is something so you would never expect, but you do. And it's amazing.
The top, like, 20, top 10 especially.
Top 10
so
is when the
intense.
Music changes to away from the standard Tetris A theme, and it changes to something completely different, and everything, all the adrenaline just goes up, and that's me placing pieces wrong and failing all the time.
Same.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Look, I'm not going to lie, none of this has made any sense to me, but I'm down to clown with it. I'm down to give
you
it
just
a go.
Have to
it
try
sounds
it.
Fun. The
you just have to try it.
From you two has sold me on it, and it does sound very fun, as silly as it is.
It's brilliant.
It's brilliant.
Give it a go.
Tetris Battle Royale is at least me and Rich's most recommendable thing
of all
these games.
It's one of the most unexpected, like, smash hits of the year because it came out of literally nowhere.
I know, and also, like, there's also the fact that any game needs 99 players, and so, like, they just kind of put it out and just assume that enough people are matchmaking at any given time, but
literally,
they are.
It's ridiculous how quickly you get into games.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Let's pivot to something more people care about.
Yeah.
Not just people actually care about. Metro Exodus, Josh, you've been going back through that.
Yes, I have.
Rethinking.
Here's the thing. Obviously, since we've had more people playing it, like Ben Roy in the office, who don't seem to like it all that
He's in
much.
The opening bit, that's why.
That's the thing, and I've been trying to reevaluate it in my brain, because I must admit, the lasting impression it gives you is just negative things. You just remember the bugs, you remember the frustrations. But in the moment, I stand by my review and what I said. Like, I love it in the moment. I love the world it creates. I love the atmosphere of it. Mm-hmm. But it is such a flawed, fascinating game.
Right.
But it's difficult, because I don't know if you've played any more since we last spoke.
Just a tiny bit, yeah. I'm into the... I don't know how... I think it's about a quarter of the way through is the desert stuff, maybe a third?
It's a bit more, actually.
Right.
Because he's the thing, like, the final... The opening is... I finally got my thoughts.
Go on.
It's a game that is most comparable to The Evil Within 2. Right.
I love
I love Metro Exodus. That tried a lot of new things. It tried to introduce sandbox elements to that franchise that historically was not sandbox based.
No.
But then, like Metro Exodus, it kind of loses that thread the further you get along. So after you get past the desert level, it starts to get more and more linear, which isn't bad because it does focus in on the story. But like Evil Within, you're sort of thinking back to those opening hours where you were free to do whatever you wanted, and you kind of miss it, and you kind of hope that going forward that the developers double down on those elements and kind of get away from it. But there is a weird identity crisis with Metro Exodus as a whole, because when you are in the metros and you're in the tunnel and you're doing things that call back to the first two games, you just realize how solid they were, how much this franchise thrives underground and thrives in those claustrophobic hallways rather than the wide open spaces. And there is part of me that kind of wishes I would like to see that again compared to, I don't know, I'm just thinking of the whole thing and the franchise as a whole. But I do love it, and I'm scared, Scott.
No, I think
you would recommend it, though.
I would absolutely recommend it.
Okay.
I would absolutely recommend
it. But I still think, I mean, like you said, you give it 4 stars. I think that, like, there's so much that is so recommendable. Like, even though you have to go down more of, like, a survivability route on the open world stuff, but that gives it such a great sense of atmosphere and the tension and, like, trying to, like, thin out the ranks of some stronghold, one guard by one kind of thing. And the story is really sparse at the start, but at least they kind of bring it back together a little bit towards the end, or give it more of a reason to get
there
through
is,
stuff.
There's a thing in the final mission that I won't spoil, but it gets kind of... The original two games were supernaturally kind of influenced.
Is that bloody blue orb again?
Well, the does make a return, I must admit.
Carry on.
But it gets to this moment where you're kind of slowly walking through this snowy, desolate building looking for, like, kind of a cure or something, looking for this objective.
Okay.
And you're hearing, like, these noises, you're hearing, like, the mutants and stuff. You're kind of, like, connected to them. And it reminded me so much of 2033.
Right.
33 or 35? Oh, and Last Light, yeah. And it reminded me so much of that, and I was just thinking, I wish the whole game was like this. Mm. This could have been a proper 5-star game had the Metro identity itself carried all the way through, because it is there, but there are things like the Mad Max inspired wastelands, there are things like the Last of Us inspired kind of outposts and stuff, and there are things that the game takes influence from other post-apocalyptic media, whereas I want that distinctive Metro tone all the way through, and it kind of nails it, but I wish it was just fully there.
Interesting. I think, because I wonder, and we talked about this on the podcast, I wonder how much they thought we should do more of an open world setting, because that's you're going to get more people interested if you can say, hey, there's another open world first person shooter, and it's a little bit Fallout adjacent as well in terms of the like general sort of aesthetic. I know that it's in Eastern Europe instead of the West, but like if you take a screenshot of Fallout, you'd still have dilapidated buildings, blown out train cars, whatever. You've kind of got like a solution to that in a way.
Well, that's the thing, it is set in Eastern Europe, but like I said, the level you're in now, where it's very sand based, it doesn't look like Eastern. That's
no,
the
and
point,
like,
but it's...
when you get to the desert bit too, like it feels so random. It's just kind of like, oh yeah, now we're stopping the train in the desert bit.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, what, you're gonna go to the sewers next? Like, just some random like assortment of video game levels,
Mario Odyssey style Metro.
Yeah,
this game.
Cloud Kingdom or something. It's just like,
oddly enough, it reminded me of Resident Evil Extinction, the third Resident Evil movie.
Yes,
where suddenly the world was a desert.
It's brilliant.
And then it wasn't in the next film, and you didn't question it. That's kind of like what Metro Exodus is with its settings.
I think it kind of like has a way of delving into different, like, you know, video game biomes, and because the shooting is so tight and the stealth is pretty solid and responsive and stuff, and you have just enough of like a survivor's story that you can kind of get through stuff. But it's weird. I mean, a lot of the reviews and impressions have been across the board. I think a lot of the fans are disappointed that there's not more of that latter stuff throughout, that you do just have these big chunks of open world stuff, and it's like, go do some stuff.
Yeah.
And the most stuff you do is gather up crafting materials and then, you know, make like a better gun or something. But overall, it's like, it's still a solid recommendable thing.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Well, I was looking through sort of, because there are kind of two different endings and they're influenced by your playstyle. So I was looking through that at the weekend of like how that plays out and stuff and the decisions you can make. And I really kind of want to go through it properly because I've jumped back into different chapters.
Right.
But I want to go back through it properly and kind of make those other decisions, because the game doesn't tell you that you're making decisions. It's all influenced by the way you're playing. And you kind of get clued in throughout when people might die or people might survive, that something is going to happen at the end that sort of is based on these decisions. And I kind of want to see how that plays out. Because I like that nothing is sort of signposted.
Well, we had that.
How you play it.
When we played the, because I was like, when I played the first few hours and I messaged you and I was like, oh my god, X just happened. And he was like, it didn't in my save.
Yeah.
And I was like, really? Because I thought, because of the fact that it's so scripted, it felt so story heavy. I was like, oh, that thing must have to happen then.
Yeah.
But it just didn't in yours.
That's what I was so surprised of, like looking at the weekend about how other people have tackled it. There is so much kind of like that I either missed or that I didn't experience or that I did differently that kind of makes me want to give it more credit.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this wasn't as scripted as I thought. Like, it was kind of influenced by my own play style. And being on that train and talking to those people, I could do that all day, I think.
Really?
Well, you don't really talk. They talk at you.
They talk at you because, like, Artyom is the silentest man.
I'm telling you, the more that game goes on and the people you save, like, the conversations they have are just so charming. Again, it reminds me of Red Dead Redemption 2 when you're around the campfire and you're playing the songs.
Okay.
There are moments like that in Metro that... there is the humanity there that you're really fighting for, and that's ultimately what kept me engaged overall.
That's very nice to see, very nice to hear. Are you interested in the Metro series, Sir Rich?
Nope. I haven't played any of them. I seem to have procured a copy of one of them. I want to say which. I think it was. Did
Last
they? Was it called Redux? Did they do a Redux?
Redux was the re-release of 1 and 2. Yeah.
That must be what I've got.
Totally. Somehow
I've got them on Steam. I've got no idea where, when, or how, but I have them. So
you've raised a very good point there, Rich. Because before this, me and Scott have harped on over and over again that we thought this was going to be the Witcher 3 moment for the franchise, everyone would have to play it. It would finally break the mainstream, and for better or worse, it's maintained its niche appeal. This game is not for everyone, but it does what it does really well, and people who like that style of game will like Metro Exodus. And I think, you know, that's good to have in the year of our Lord 2019, where everything is trying to appeal to everyone and try to be so mainstream, like we've talked about Anthem, like we've talked about Crackdown, to have this proper complex, deep.
I want the silent experience. Protagonist, all right? I want jarring conversations,
look,
all right?
Look, I'm not
I
saying, want them. I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm just saying it's pretty good.
It's pretty good. That was the perfect way to put it. It's maintained its own franchise identity, even though they have kind of flexed in different ways for the first half of it. So that stuff's interesting. I thought we could end on Resident Evil 2's new DLC, because I think... Have you played the DLC yet, Rich?
I haven't played the DLC yet. I am. I love Resident Evil 2.
Bloody
like,
good, isn't it?
We've obviously, we did the podcast on it a while ago about, like, this was my first foray into Resident Evil, and I love 2. I'm currently playing through Claire B on Twitch, and I'm very much pacing myself with this game, and I'm really happy that I am, rather than binge through like the 4 plus however many more campaigns straight away, because I binged through Leon A and then gave it a bit, and then I started playing Claire B online, and I just it's great fun.
Yes.
And watching you guys play the DLC last week,
check out the stream
yeah, plug, it's fantastic. I love the idea that they can still, I think just in terms of game design, how they can take such a like finite map and do so much with it and change up how, because obviously the DLC seems more arcadey versus the more not realistic approach to the main campaigns, but it's just a different way to experience that game. And
well, they've taken,
you take the floor because you guys have played it.
Yeah, so they've taken there's a character called Hunk that you could get in the original game. You can get him in the new game, and that's just like a gauntlet style bonus level. Did you get the Hunk thing?
I haven't got that bit yet. I'm
okay, so you after you finish them both routes, you unlock Hunk, and then you go through like a chunk of the level, like, you know, trying to get through as fast as you can. That mentality is what they've done for the DLC, but they're a series of what if campaigns. So you're playing as like Kendo, like the gun store owner. There's a character called Catherine Warren, who was like just a corpse.
She's
in
a
the
corpse
main story
on the table. Yeah.
But in this one, she stabs what do we call the dude,
the policeman,
Alfred thingy, stabs the guy that was going to kill her anyway and goes on the run. And so they're three different characters. The other one is a different soldier. They're stupidly hard.
They are ridiculously hard.
And so I've done one of the three. It's matching, you know, your time to get through them, but it's just a series of different rooms, like, you know, a different pathway through the level, trying to get through it as fast as you can, basically, like doing different runs. So obviously already online on Twitch and stuff, it's become a thing to do like a no damage run or to try and get through without firing any bullets or whatever. But you're just getting grabbed left, right, and center. You're having to like really micromanage exactly what you're picking up or what you're going to use. Zombies have backpacks, so if you shoot them, you can take the items out of the backpacks. And there are candy machines, but you can only take one out of three items from a candy machine. So it's like, do you want to take a health item or some more bullets or like a herb to maybe like mix with a different herb later on? It's very, very memorization heavy. Josh, have you found it?
Because I like it. I think the way we played it sort of maybe like it a bit more, because we were playing it obviously as a three and we were taking
screaming at each other.
Screaming,
I don't need the flamethrower, okay?
I didn't need the flamethrower at all. But I think that's a good way to play it. Like you said, it seems kind of designed for sort of that Twitch setting.
Yes.
And that sort of everyone wants someone to succeed and like taking turns. I played it a bit on my own as well, and I still really, really enjoyed it. I love that it's there. Mm. It sort of lacked the same initial charm, maybe because we played it for 2 hours already.
We did try and bash our heads against it for 2 hours trying to get through the Catherine Warren campaign. And then I went home and did it my second try in 7 minutes. And I was just like, why couldn't I have done that?
It's the competitive.
It's the performance aspect of being streaming.
It might be. I think it's because we're still trying to figure it out as well, because like I said, it's very memorization heavy. You need to remember exactly where enemies are going to come from and exactly where you need to shoot them to make them stagger in certain directions to open up a space so you can get through. So there's a lot of stuff like that. Each one of the characters' modes or levels or whatever has their own unique enemy as well. So one of them in Kendo is a poison zombie, so if you shoot it, it explodes with poison, so you
so
can't kill
boomer.
It up close. Kind of like
a boomer.
Little boom chungus. And so if you shoot that thing too close, you'll get poisoned. So then you need it. Then next time you're at one of the candy machines, it's like you're going to want blue herbs so you can cure the poison. Catherine Warren's one, it's paleheads who just regenerate all the time. So even if you put them down, they'll just regenerate and come back at you again. Little things like that. They are interesting, but very annoying.
Very, very annoying. I don't know what you guys think they're going to do with like the DLC going forward, because they have said that there's a few more content drops coming.
Well, I thought this was going to be the story one, because I love Kendo's scene in the main story. That's very, very sad.
Maybe that's just a tease for potentially there being something more. I just think it's great that they're adding so much longevity to this sort of... I mean, I don't know what it was like in the original, how finite it was, but I've seen people saying, oh, there was one of these like trial run, like these test run things on the N64 version of Resi 2 and stuff like that.
Tank's the nearest thing to that.
Potentially, but yeah, I like the fact that they're adding so much to this because, like I said, I'm pacing myself. I'm looking forward to eventually getting to that. Yes. But like I said, I'm quite happy just to give myself time to really breathe in this game nice and slowly. Because like after I finish Claire B Online, I'm going to probably go through and play Claire A and then get to Leon B.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Go through it like that, but I'll do that on my own time as well. But like because I'm pacing myself, there's still a lot. Like hopefully by the time I get through all those campaigns, we might have some more DLC
after that. Yeah, you should exhaust the story side of it because the DLC is just grinding down to the combat, like just the combat. How well can you nail a headshot? How well can you duck and weave and get through stuff? So that's very much the focus.
What I want to see is those new enemies and those new scenarios introduced in the DLC remixed into the original
good,
campaign.
Those poison guys.
Claire B remixed.
Yeah,
Leon A remixed.
I don't, got new enemies and stuff.
Poison damage in all games can get in the sea. I hate it. I hate dying to just some stupid poison thing when I've just defeated all the stuff and you die anyway.
I would
love
to have watched you go through Blighttown for the first time.
Oh my summer child. It was absolute hell. That thing you fought the frame rate more than the poison,
true.
But
that's true.
Lordy. Not to worry though. Yes, let us know what you guys are playing down in the comments below if you're watching the video version, or find us on social media if you're on any of the various audio platforms that we're on now. This has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Rich Hudson.
Thank you very much for listening.
And joined by Josh
Barrow. Thank you very much for listening.
I'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.